Tell these potses I used to watch you play in the park like Bobby Fischer used to show them this.
Montage.
Your boy used pieces in combination to attack, lady.
Montage. Oh, shut up, man. Look what you did.
Josh Waiskin's journey to becoming a master chess player was not immediate. Whenever you use a movie as a backdrop for something, or we go to a theater, it's kind of one of those things that we never get. What we see happening in a two-hour event really happened over a longer period of time. You have to understand he's a self-taught player. As a matter of fact, what you just watched was a retelling of the very first chess game he had ever played. Until this point, he had just used his little Lego figures in a room to make his own little chess set, figuring out how the pieces moved as he watched others play the game in the park and go home and try to mimic them. Instead of studying under polished chess gurus or greats, he honed his skills by playing in Street Hustlers in Washington Square. Once his parents saw his gifts, they did do some formal training. However, the early days of the park never left him. Josh Waiskins played chess with reckless abandon, and while at times it served him well, it often cost him games, and well, sometimes even made it more difficult to win. He was a gifted, natural chess player, but Josh had some disciplines to learn. So with that in mind, I have two words for you to consider this morning. Be still. Seriously, and I realize the kids are with us, and I did this on purpose. I want you to do it. Put your pens down. You have a while before you have to fill in a blank. So put your pens down. Sit up straight. Put your hands in your lap. And let's try it. Just be still. It's hard, isn't it? When you're trying to be still, inevitably something itches that just needs to be scratched, right? It just sort of happens. Every noise, you hear it. The hum of the projector, the slight buzz in the sound system, a cough, a sneeze, fire truck goes by. Immediately something distracts us. And even if I can manage to steal my body, as I'm sitting here, my mind is racing. Do you know how many things I've got left on my to-do list before I have to go back to work in the morning? Wonder what I'm going to have for lunch today. Man, I sure am looking excited. Well, I sure am excited about that football game I'm going to watch this afternoon. I remember a lot of times I sit here and think, did I remember to lock that door when I left the house? Did I cut the stove off? See, as I am forced to be still, I just can't do it. As a matter of fact, I'm watching you, and very few of you have even managed to do it. And believe it or not, it's been about 60 seconds. You're already starting to move. We have a very hard time with being still, let alone this idea. Be still and know that I am God. Like just Josh's story that I introduced to you last week. So if you missed last week's sermon, good news, we're in the modern age. You can go back and you can pick up the introduction to this sermon series from last week. You can pick it up on the YouTube channel and you can watch it. In 2020, we discussed living faith. This year, we're going to move on to begin to discuss the idea of mature faith. How do I go from just living my faith to actually having my faith begin to mature? So in a brief summary of last week's sermon, remember, I spent the 2020 year living just like you did, wondering when's it going to be over. But as I began to watch 2020 unfold, I began to read, and I began to listen, and I began to watch, and I realized we have become such a reactive people. Our society has become so very argumentative. And I would love to tell you it's just society, but when it comes to our church, we are just as argumentative as the world, and there is more bickering and more division, and it just seems like more angst than I've ever seen in our society before. And you know, I'm willing to put some of that on social media because our voices have become amplified, because no longer do I have to think. Think about this. 20 years ago, if I was upset about something, I would have to go get a piece of paper and write it, and then get a stamp. By the way, kids, that's a little square thing about this big they put on an envelope, okay? And an envelope is a long thing that you fold up and you put a piece of paper in, because we don't use those anymore, do we? So I'd have to get an envelope and write an address on it and take it to the post office. By the way, that's a building that you take to mail things, okay? Take it to the post office and let it get there. And so I would have to put all of this thought into how I was going to react to something. Not today. Man, I see something. I can open up my phone and I can text it out, or I can tweet it out, or I can post it on my Facebook. Okay, I can't. I don't have a Facebook account. But you can post it on your Facebook account. And all of a sudden, we can just react. And then we react to the reactions and reactions of reactions upon reactions. And I realize that's part of it. But honestly, I think we've lost the ability to have a mature conversation. Part of the loss, I believe, has to do with the pace that we are currently living our lives. Thus, these words from God become even more important to us. Be still and know that I'm God. Now, I want you to know something. I haven't asked you to move yet. Are you still sitting in your position up straight with your hands in your... Most of us have shifted. We can't do it. The notion of being still for that long, you've got to be kidding me. That's torture. I mean, this is what we make our kids do when we're trying to punish them, right? We put them in the timeout corner and tell them, don't move. Because we want them to be punished. See, that's the way we see stillness. But I want you to begin to see it as this word, maturity. Now, maturity actually has three definitions. There's a physical definition. It means fully developed, physically formed, or full grown. Now, we've got our kids with us here today, and so it is not hard to see the difference between a child and an adult. Okay? As we look around, we can pretty much tell who's below the age of, I'll say 12, because once you get 14, 15, sometimes it gets hard to tell these days. But we can tell the difference physically between who's a child and who's an adult. Adults are generally bigger. We're generally more developed in our arms and our muscle tone and what have you, because kids are still growing. They're not mature yet. But you know, not only is maturity about physical, maturity is about emotional. Emotional in the idea of having reached an advanced stage of mental or emotional development characteristic of an adult. Now, I will tell you, as we reach the emotional point, sometimes it gets a little more complicated to tell who's a child and who's the adult. Emotionally speaking, many of us still react to life like we are children. Just at the moment we hear something, it's like, I got to do something. You know something, that kids aren't usually very patient creatures. They're not designed that way. They are trained to react because, you know what, they want what they want and they don't see a big future. They always want it now. Unfortunately, we as adults, it gets a little hard sometimes because we're in a we want it now mode. And you know, that's the physical and that's the emotional. But then we move to the idea of what does it mean to be spiritually mature? And well, Paul defines that for us in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 14 through 16. By the way, you probably want to start reaching for your pens if you're a fill-in-the-blank person. We're getting there. Then we will no longer be infants tossed back and forth by the waves blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people and their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of Him who is the head, that is Christ. So let me break out some things of what it means to have a spiritual maturity. And I'll let you decide whether or not you are spiritually mature or not. This is not me judging people, but here's what Paul says. Mature people think before they speak. Now, I will tell you, this is one of those areas that I have struggles with, because sometimes what enters my head comes out of my mouth, and sometimes there is no filter between the two. But you do understand, mature people don't just react for the sake of reacting. They think about what they're going to say before they start to respond. Mature people, they're not easily deceived. You know, a lot of times that is what happens in our society is we're easily deceived and we move from this to that to the other because we're not sure which way to turn, or we get the other symptom that you're easily deceived. You're unable to tell who's deceiving you and who's not. So what we begin to do is we begin to trust nobody. Because if I trust nobody, then I don't ever have to develop the mature notion of not being deceived because I understand right from wrong. I understand good from bad. I understand the difference between who's being truthful and who's not. Mature people, you ever tried to do things with kids? They're easily deceived. Magic tricks work much better with kids than they do with adults because adults are trying to pay attention to see how you're doing it. The kids are paying attention to the trick. They want to see it. They're easily deceived. And a lot of times in our spiritual life, we are too. Mature people are seldom reactive for the sake of reacting. Mature people, when something happens to them, they don't just react. They, most of the time, they have their moments. Everybody reaches a breaking point. Most of the time, they step back and they decide how their reaction is going to impact the rest of the world, or at least the world right around them. And they don't just react. Oh, and by the way, mature people, they understand the value in being still. You know, one of the reasons we have struggles with being still, what good does it do me? I mean, what good does it do me just to sit here and be still when there are a bazillion things that I need to go get done, or maybe even another bazillion things that I want to do? I don't see any value in wasting time just being still. So to develop this maturity of being still, just like Josh had to develop his game, we're going to have to develop some disciplines for ourselves on how to be still. And the first discipline is one that none of us are very good at. It's called solitude. The idea of solitude. Let me give you some quotes from some popular people about what solitude means to them. Lawrence Stern says, "In solitude, the mind gains strength and learns to lean upon itself." Henry David Thoreau says, "I never found a companion that was as compatible as solitude." Blaise Pascal, a math genius, "All man's miseries derive from not being able to sit quietly in a room alone." Pablo Picasso, "Without great solitude, no serious work is possible." Gary Mark Gilmore, "One can be instructed in society, and one is inspired only in solitude." Albert Einstein, "Solitude is painful when one is young, but delightful when one is more mature." C.S. Lewis, "We live, in fact, in a world starved for solitude, silence, and private, and therefore starved for meditation and true friendship." So this morning we're going to talk about solitude. And if you think back about a year or so ago when they started the whole quarantine thing and people were asked to stay at home, we found out we are not very good at solitude. We are not. As a matter of fact, we began looking for excuses to get out and be around people. Solitude is just not something we're good at. But do you know what? It's actually good for our psychology to understand the value of solitude. So this is not spiritual at all, this next little section here. If you're here today and you came here and you have no idea why you're here because you're not interested in spiritual stuff, well, let me just tell you what solitude does for your mentality of things. Alone time increases empathy. When you spend time with certain circles of friends or your coworkers, you develop a we versus them mentality. Spending time alone helps you develop more compassion for people who may not fit into your inner circle. Solitude increases productivity. Communication is important. However, studies show being surrounded by people kills productivity. People perform better when they have a little privacy. Solitude sparks creativity. There's a reason a lot of authors and artists want to go in a cabin or in the woods in a private studio to work, because alone with your thoughts gives your brain a chance to wander, which can help you become more creative. Being alone can help build your mental strength. We're social creatures, and it's important for us to have strong connections with people. But solitude may be just as important. Studies show the ability to tolerate alone time has been linked to increased happiness, better life satisfaction, and improved stress management. People who enjoy alone time experience less depression. Isn't that fascinating? Here you go. I just got all of my parents' attention. Solitude may reduce behavior problems in kids. When you carve out some solitude in your schedule, you show your children that being alone is a healthy thing to do. And research shows that kids who learn to do by themselves are better behaved than other children. Therefore, parents, be a good role model. Teach some solitude skills to your kids. Being alone gives you the opportunity to plan your life. Most people spend a lot of time planning weddings and vacations, but how often do we plan time for our life? Spending time alone can give you a chance to ensure there's a purpose to all the hustling and bustling. Quiet space provides an opportunity to think about your goals, your progress, and the changes you want to make in your life. How many people here made at least one New Year's resolution? Oh, I see no hands this morning. Maybe you've learned the question. You understand New Year's resolutions never work because usually we don't have a plan to put them in place. In solitude, you can actually make a plan. And here's the important one. Solitude helps you know yourself. You want to find out what kind of a person you are? Spend some time alone with yourself. Being alone helps you become more comfortable in your own skin. When you're by yourself, you can make choices without outside influences, and that will help you develop a more insight into who you are as a person. Now, I just want to go ahead and tell you, being alone does not mean you and your phone. Okay? Solitude does not mean you go into your room and you shut your door and you text for an hour with somebody else. As a matter of fact, to truly experience solitude, shock of shock, here it comes, you have to cut the phone off. Not just the ringer. You have to cut the phone off because today, especially today, we have a hard time being alone because even when I'm alone, I've got the thing that buzzes in my head to say, somebody's looking for you or somebody wants to talk to you. Solitude is something that we must learn, and solitude means by yourself. So that's the psychology of why solitude is good for you from an emotional standpoint and what it can give you, even if you don't throw any spiritual aspect to it. But, you know, when it comes to spiritualness, solitude's important. How do I know? Well, because I know who the master teacher is. And when it comes to the master teacher, Jesus sought solitude. Luke chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so the crowds of people came to hear him and be healed of their sickness. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. That seems kind of counterintuitive, right? I mean, the crowds are building. Now's the time to make hay while the sun is shining, right? Now's the time to push out. But as the crowds began to form, all of a sudden Jesus would disappear. And he would go off and he called it a lonely place. Just him and just God. Now, not only did Jesus seek it out for himself, Jesus encouraged solitude. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So Jesus encouraged us to just get by ourselves. One of the things that the elders did not do last year that I thoroughly enjoyed doing is there is a place that we usually go and we do what's called a leadership retreat. We kind of did that here in town today, but it's not this year, but it's just not last year, but it's just not the same. Because when you go where we go for our retreat, I'm not kidding you, there's a 1-foot by 1-foot square where your cell phone works. If you move out of that 1-foot by 1-foot square, you have no service. Therefore, we're alone. We're cut off. We have no idea what's going on in the outside world, and it gives us a chance to focus. Now, in both of those little examples I just gave you of Jesus and solitude, it talked about the idea of prayer. We're going to talk about prayer in a few weeks, but I just want to let you know, praying is not the only time Jesus sought solitude. So in learning how to do solitude, I am going to give you today 5 moments in your life that if you're going to learn to be still and know that He is God, you're going to have to learn how to get alone with yourself and with God for these 5 moments in your life. And you're going to recognize a lot of them. And you're going to probably look back and say, wow, that's why it didn't work when I did it my way. So here we go. 5 moments Jesus chose solitude. He wasn't forced. It was His decision to go it alone, just Him and God. So here they are. Number 1, Jesus sought solitude to prepare for a major task. Luke chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, left the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where for 40 days He was tempted by the devil. He ate nothing during those days, and at the end of them, He was hungry. So we're all the way back at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. This is at Jesus' baptism. He goes under the water. He gets pulled up from the water. The sky opens up. The dove comes down. The voice is heard. This is My Son in whom I am pleased. Listen to Him. And you would think, this is the time, Jesus. This is the time to begin preaching. You got the masses. You got their attention. You've got the miracle sitting right there. Now is the time to start. Nope. Nope. Before you start a major task, which Jesus was about to do, go and get alone with God. For 40 days, Jesus was alone. And by the way, He was fasting during that time, and we'll talk about that in a few weeks. But I want you to see what this alone time did. This alone time forced Him to rely on God. It forced Jesus, the Son of God, be still and know that I am God. This was a lesson that Jesus showed us at the beginning of His ministry. So I want you to think about this. How many times have you had a major task in your life, something big that's about to happen in your life, and you didn't take solitude? You didn't take time to get by yourself and think about it. Let me ask you something. What's your odds like? Do they usually turn out good? Or they usually turn out bad. Or has Jesus got a point here in seeking solitude before I begin a major part of my life? How about this one? Jesus sought solitude to recharge after hard work. Mark chapter 6, verses 30 through 32. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to Him all they had done and taught. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not have a chance to eat, He said to them, come with Me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Now, first thing I want you to see is there's a lot of these little aspects. You're going to see a lot of these words again as we learn these disciplines, because this idea of solitude is the front line for all of the other things that we're going to learn. And in this story, the disciples were tired. Why were they tired? Well, they were tired because they had been out there busy meeting the needs of all of these other people and healing people and preaching to people and talking to people. And it says they were just flat out worn out. And Jesus said, hey, I know the solution. Solitude. Let's get away. Let's pull back from the crowd. And I'm sure the disciples were like, Jesus, you don't get it. Look, it's a crowd. No, no, no. We'll suck it up. We'll just keep moving. There's a crowd. Jesus like, just trust Me on this one, guys. Pull back. Catch your breath. You're not designed to go 24/7. And I'm talking to myself especially, because I'm not designed to go 24/7. You are not designed to keep going and going and going. So at the moment the tank begins to empty, it's time for us to seek a little solitude. Because you know what our natural tendency is to push through it. And here's the reality of it. The tireder I can get you, the more easy you become frustrated. And the easier it is to get you frustrated, the easier it is to get a reaction out of you. And the easier I can get a reaction out of you, the easier it is for me to take advantage of the reaction that you've just made that you really didn't think through. So Jesus says, you know what? Avoid all of it. Seek solitude. Be still. And know that I'm God. It says that we are to seek solitude to work through grief. Maybe you never thought about this. Matthew chapter 14 through 13. When Jesus heard what had happened, so what had just happened is John the Baptist had just been beheaded. When he heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. I think we miss this in our society. We suffer loss, whether it's the loss of a loved one, whether it's the loss of something in our life, and we're grieving over the loss. And what does society now tell us to do? Get busy, right? I mean, you don't have any reason to be sad. You don't have time to waste grieving. Usually when we think about Jesus and the idea of death, we think about him and Lazarus when he rose Lazarus from the dead. But this is a completely different idea. Notice how Jesus dealt with the loss in life. He got alone. Just him and just God. He chose to still his life and know who is in charge of my life. Think about that perspective it would give you. I know a lot of times when we do funerals, we get the crush of people right after the funeral. And our houses are jammed and the phone calls and the mailbox always seems to have a card in it. And then long about 2 or 3 weeks, life begins to return to normal for everybody else. And the phone calls aren't as frequent and the mailbox really doesn't get anything other than bills and junk mail. And then we have to decide. Now what? And Jesus says, make the logical decision. While your heart is wounded, your God is strong. So instead of going out and trying to seek others necessarily, he says, you know what? Just be still. Just be still. And know that I'm God. Allow the Holy Spirit to be the person that can heal that wounded heart. Allow the Holy Spirit to minister to you. But you have to be still and seek a quiet place. Now here's one. I'm sure all of us have done this one, right? Jesus sought solitude before making an important decision. Luke chapter 6, verses 12 through 13. One of those days, Jesus went out to the mountainside to pray and spent the night. Can you imagine this? Spent the night praying to God. An entire night? Come on, I'm lucky if I can go an entire minute. Okay? I mean, a night? How do you pray for a whole night? Well, keep in mind, he built a habit. When the morning came, he called his disciples to him, and he chose 12 of them, who he also designated apostles. Now, this is important because Jesus didn't pick his disciples by putting all the names in a hat and picking out the first 12. Okay? Jesus didn't go out there and survey the crowd and say, so who do you think would be a good leader for the church? Who do you think would be the best leader? This wasn't a popularity contest. There was no Twitter poll. Nobody else got any opinion in what Jesus did except for him and God. He was about to make the decision, think about it, that would shape history for the church. The 12 men that he chose to be the apostles are the ones that are going to be the first people to go out and share the gospel. They're the ones that are going to be setting up the structure for the church. They're the ones that will be tasked with dealing with the persecution of the first church. These 12 men have to have something special about them. And Jesus didn't take the decision lightly. As a matter of fact, it says he disappeared for an entire night And it says that he anguished in prayer. I want to pick the right 12. Now, this is a little beyond me because he's Jesus and he can see everybody's heart. He knows everybody's mind. He knows everything that's going on in everybody's life. Why does he need an entire night to figure it out? That's the point. If Jesus needed an entire night to figure it out for him to make a good decision, how much time should we be taking to make our good decisions? But oftentimes, what are we? We're impulse shoppers, aren't we? We go through the store online and we see that thing that we think that we want. And we're like, it's a good decision. I can justify the decision, so we buy away. We're reactive decision makers. If I don't do something right now, bad things are going to happen. And you know what? This isn't a good decision, but I'm going to take the least of the bad decisions I've got. So I make my decision. How does this usually turn out for you? I can think back through my life, and there are three major decisions that I have made that I didn't spend time thinking about it by myself before I made them. And just so you know, I'm 0 for 3. All three of those decisions either ended up costing us money, or it ended up badly, or it ended up hurting somebody else. I can think of those three right off the top of my head. When I saw this, that's one thing that it just jumped out at me. Three times in my life, I'm 0 for 3 in those big decisions. So what if when we're out there and something's there and it's just kind of happening, what if we took a moment and say, you know what? Let me go check with my financial counselor. That's God, by the way. Let me go check with my spiritual advisor. That's God, by the way. Let me go check with my life coach. Yeah, that's God too. What if when I come to those major decisions in my life, I just chose to tell everybody, stop. I'm going to step out of the situation, and me and God are going to go talk about it. I'll get back to you. Oh, but you might miss an opportunity. I might. But I also might miss the opportunity for a disaster. Might I not? See, I can tell you three times when I know I made a really bad decision because I went too fast. I can tell you lots of times when I took a moment to breathe and think and look and pray. And God blessed the decision because I included God in the decision-making process. Folks, be still and know that I'm God. We don't have to always be in such a hurry. How about this one? In time of distress. Luke chapter 22, verses 39 through 44. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and all and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down, and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." And the angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. You know what? Because we avoid solitude, distress, it gets bigger. Because how do I usually deal with my distress? I seek the opinions of others. Don't we? How many times have you found yourself in a bad situation, or you found yourself in an impossible situation or a stressful situation in which the first thing you do, you seek the opinion of somebody else? You busy your life, and you know what? You just keep seeking opinions until the ones that you find. Could you imagine if Jesus had done that before the crucifixion? What do you think the advice he would have heard sounded like? We know, because we've heard the story. If he had asked Peter, Peter would have said, "Let's fight." If he'd asked Judas, he'd have said, "Let's make a bargain." If he'd asked James and John, they'd have said, "Call down the fire, Jesus." If he'd asked the other disciples, they would have said, "Run away." But fortunate to us, Jesus had already built in this habit. Solitude. It says, stone's throw. So he didn't go off and find a place that nobody could see him. It says about a stone's throw. So you know, depending on how good of a thrower you are, you know, that's probably about from here. I could probably throw a stone with those doors open. I could probably reach the back door back there. So he didn't just disappear, but he put enough distance between him and them to get his mind focused. Because he didn't want their opinion in his head. He wanted God's plan in his head. In his last free moments of life here on this planet, Jesus did not spend it rioting to the masses, trying to whip people into a frenzy. Jesus did not spend it seeking to consult family and friends. He simply got alone with God. Why? Because Jesus understood, be still. And know that I'm God. Sit straight. Put your hands in your lap. Take a moment. Be still. Let's take it a step further. Close your eyes and bow your head. Just be still. Allow your mind to clear. Allow your thoughts to focus. Not on the endless tasks. Not on the things that you have to do. Not on your life. Just take a moment. And let God speak. Look up at me. That was 60 seconds. I know I was watching the clock. Woody, how much better do you think your life would be if maybe you committed just that amount of time? Let's start small. 60 seconds. Start your day off this way. Get alone with God. Still your heart. Still your mind. Still your thoughts. Just you and God. Here's what I'm going to bet. You're going to start with 60 seconds and you're going to figure it out really quick. That's not enough time. Maybe you'll go to 5 minutes and then 10 minutes. I'm not asking you to pray. I'm not asking you to read God's scripture at this point. I'm just asking you. Step one, learn how to get alone with just you and God. Be still and know that I am God. Because he is really, really interested in knowing you. So I get to have a little fun this morning before I ask the worship team to come up. Matthias Cooper, would you come and join me right here? Yes, you do have to have your mask on. And I have mine. Look, I'm a good example person. I've stuffed it in my pocket.